Welcome to Ujiria, broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios. Ujiria is a Greek word meaning health of body and mind in aging individuals. Ujiria Radio is a weekly show celebrating the heroes that contribute to the Ujiria of our elderly and disabled population. Now joining us in the studio are your hosts, Sam Grass and Brad Culp.
Good morning. This is Sam Grass in Atlanta, Georgia. Today is February the 24th, 2015.
I know. And we just did the Alzheimer's thing a few weeks ago.
You know, showing my age. What can I say? Joining me in the studio today, as you heard, is Lee Cantor, our producer. Good morning, Lee. How are you?
I am A-OK.
Good. And Mary Jo Bowser. Mary Jo?
Good morning, Sam.
How are you doing?
I'm fine. Thank you.
How you like this cold, snowy day in Atlanta?
It's better than ice. Snow and slush is better than ice.
I got to be careful. People get so panicky here in the South when snow comes, but you just deal with it. You start earlier, you drive slower, and you go. But that doesn't seem to be the mindset here.
That's right. Sometimes.
Our guest today, we welcome our guest today. Her name is Sheila Reddy. Almost said Reedy.
Dr. Sheila Reddy.
Boy, I messed that up from beginning to end, didn't I?
It's been known to happen.
Yes, it has. Excuse me, Dr. Reddy. Okay, there we go. Welcome. We're glad you're with us. Dr. Reddy is with the Alpha Family Medicine. She specializes in family and geriatric medicine, and I'm sure she has some great information for us. So welcome to the show.
Good morning. As they mentioned, my name is Sheila Reddy. I practice family and geriatric medicine in Alpharetta, Georgia. I started the clinic 3 months ago, and we take care of all ages, and we specialize in the elderly care. We provide comprehensive primary care to the elderly. We take care of their acute medical problems as well as their chronic medical conditions. We do healthcare screenings, immunizations, and also when they are seeing many consultants, we coordinate the care with all the consultants they see.
That's a great need. That's a great thing.
Yes. And we assist our patients in other services. We kind of coordinate community services available. If they need Meals on Wheels, we arrange it through the local churches. If they need any other assistance with transportation, we go through senior services for North Fulton and arrange those. It's based on the individual needs of the patients we see.
That's fantastic. Let's take a step back and tell our listening audience a little bit of your background, where you're from, where you went to school, and more specifically, though, how did you get to the Atlanta market?
Okay.
And geriatric medicine.
Sure. I went to medical school in India. This was in mid-1980s. I had three sets of grandparents, and all of them had chronic medical conditions. I used to accompany them to their physicians, and I always liked their primary care physician. Then I decided, that time I was in middle school, that I wanted to be a general medicine physician practicing primary care. So I finished my med school, and I was practicing in India. My husband got a job in Mobile, Alabama, so we moved to Mobile. Then I had to do the residency in Mobile, and I was working. In India, the life expectancy is, early 70s, maybe mid-70s at that time. And I was not comfortable taking care of 100-year-olds or 105-year-old patients. Then I decided, let me go do clinical fellowship in geriatric medicine so I'll be more comfortable and competent to take care of these patients, and they have special needs at this age group. So I went to Emory University in Atlanta, did a geriatric medicine and gerontology fellowship, went back to Mobile, practiced there for 13 years total, including the residency. Then we moved to Alpharetta, Georgia in November of 2014. So I started a primary care clinic for family and geriatric medicine.
And what brought you to Atlanta? Why did you come back?
Most of my family, they live in North Atlanta, Cumming, Milton. So we were looking at the areas where we wanted to be. There were a lot of senior population in the North Fulton County, Forsyth County. So I decided, so I will be close to those areas and open the clinic.
And tell us where your clinic's located.
It's on Highway 9 in Alpharetta, 480 North Main Street, Suite 202. Alpharetta, Georgia, 30009.
Okay.
There's a nice big sign out. That's how I found her, that says Alpharetta Family and Geriatric Medicine.
That's correct. Yes.
Dr. Rudy, we know that obviously the elderly have unique needs.
Yes.
Expand and tell us what you see some of those unique needs are.
Okay. I have a lot of patients who have frequent falls. They have fractured their, you know, multiple bones at one point or the other. And before the fall, they have been living at home, but now they are not able to live independently. So they were needing more assistance. So I kind of try to match them up with all the services they need so they can stay at home for as long as possible safely. And if they're not able to do so, then I assist them with the placement services, either it assisted living or nursing home, whatever the patient's needs are. And the other issue I see is memory problem, dementia, not able to take care of themselves, mostly assistance with their activities of daily living. As long as they're independent in their basic ADLs, they can stay at home with other community support services. And there are several home care companies which provide those basic ADL services, like your company,
Griswold.
Tell our listening audience what the, first of all, tell them what ADL stands for and then what they are.
Okay. ADLs mean activities of daily living. There are two kinds of ADLs, basic ADLs and instrumental ADLs. Basic ADLs is like what we need to do to take care of ourselves. Say, example, feeding. Is the person able to feed himself or herself? Are they able to get to the bathroom? Are they able to clean up after toileting? Are they able to put on their clothes, take off their clothes, take a shower? Those sorts of things. Whereas the instrumental activities of daily living is little more skilled needs. Are they able to use a telephone? Are they able to take their medications? Are they able to pay their bills? Are they able to go to their doctor's appointments or go to grocery store? Those sorts of things. Or transportation is one of the IADLs.
And when you speak of instrumental, I view those as social functions. Does that make sense?
That's correct. Okay. Most of the time, if they need any help with the instrumental ADLs, their family members or friends can pitch in, or there are other services available. Say if they're not able to prepare their meals, then they can use Meals on Wheels service. If they're not able to drive, they can use transportation. Public transportation is available, or they can pay a certain fee and they can use other transportation services.
Let's go back and talk about, develop more the two unique issues as it relates to seniors. First of all, falls, and then later on, let's talk about memory disorders. What can the individual do to limit the risk of falling?
Okay. There are several things we can do. We always forget about our five senses. They notice that people who have difficulty seeing or hearing are at increased risk of falling. So talking to the patient, find out what happened during the time of fall, the situation, the circumstances of the fall will give us an idea. It may be poor lighting in the night, or there may be a lot of obstacles on the floor. They may have slipped on a throw rug. Or they may be weak in their legs. They didn't have good strength. They may have impaired balance or gait problems. once we find out or identify the cause, then we can treat that. Say if they have problems with their gait and balance, we can refer them to physical therapy. They can help them with that. Sometimes they may need an assistive device for walking. They may need a cane or a walker. Sometimes they may forget to use their assistive device because of memory problems. So it's not one particular thing. It's a combination of things.
You know what? I just want to say, I think in medicine today, one of the losses is that coordinating physician, that quarterback on the team. It seems to me like maybe that's your function, that you're the first responder.
Yes.
And I think that's great, and I think that's really needed. A needed service.
Mm-hmm. Well, in our medical industry here in the United States, that is one of the fallacies, is that we have so many specialists that unfortunately do a great job in treating the acute, but
yes.
Do not do a good job in coordinating the chronic.
Right, mm-hmm. Treating the whole person.
Yeah.
Now, when does a patient leave their primary care physician and then move to a geriatric physician?
Based on their needs. So now we see there may be a 90-year-old lady who is very healthy, takes very good care of herself. She may not need to see a geriatrician as long as she's independent. Then on the other hand, we may see a 60-year-old person who may have multiple medical problems, who may have... he may have had a stroke and is not able to walk, so he may be falling because of that, who may have incontinence and other issues. So based on their medical conditions, it used to be age 65 was the cutoff. When people get Medicare, we used to say, okay, they can qualify for geriatric care, but healthcare has changed a lot recently. Everyone is taking good care of themselves. So as long as they're independent, they can manage their problems, they can see their primary care physician. But if they need special services, then they can see a geriatric medicine specialist because they know more about home health and other services. They can coordinate their care better.
Do you ever work with the family member, where the family member is the one that's the catalyst to
yes.
get the parent to switch?
Yeah. The philosophy for geriatric medicine is a multidisciplinary or interdisciplinary care. The physician is just a part of the team member. The team usually consists of the patient, family, the person who helps them with their ADL, say home care person. Actually, they spend more time with the patient than the physician. The physician may see them maybe for half an hour every 3 months or so, but the person who helps them with their medication, with their activities of daily living, knows what's going on with the patient. So I always like to talk with them and find out about the person's routine, if anything has changed recently, because when they have memory problems, they try to camouflage and they may not tell me the correct history. So I usually get the history from the caretakers. When something goes wrong, they're the first people to notice, okay, Miss So-and-so is acting a little different today. She's not her usual self. Something is going on. So that gives me an idea.
Yeah, and it's real funny. Mary Jo knows this. Though we're there to assist in the activities of daily living, as you said, our caregivers are with the patient or the client more probably than any other individual,
yes.
even family members.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a unique perspective in that we can recognize these subtle changes that were identified early and communicated properly to the proper source. You can prevent the onset of issues, whether it be chronic or acute. And that's the whole thing. It's a team effort in the realm of communicating and documenting.
And it makes it so much better for us as the caregivers to know that there's that quarterback, there's that family physician involved.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Let's go to the second issue. And I know in your study of seniors, you spend a good amount of time or a great amount of time on memory disorders. It seems in my mind, doing what I do, that there's more and more and more. Now, I don't know if that's true. Maybe we diagnose differently than we did 30 years ago. obviously so, because we know more. But it is, and I'd say this, Mary Jo, 50% of our clients have some form of memory disorder. Let's just talk about that. What should an individual be looking for those subtle telltale signs of some of a memory disorder? Would it be dementia, Alzheimer's, or Parkinson's?
Mm-hmm. Okay. And is there anything at all to do to prevent it or slow it down? Okay.
When we think about memory disorders, we always think about Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's is the most common memory problem, but there are other kinds of memory disorders as well. What I look at it, the way I look at memory problem is it reversible or not reversible? The reason behind this is if it is reversible, then we can correct the cause and that can improve their memory. First, we take a good history, talk to the patient, talk to the team members, their caregivers, family, friends, because dementia or memory problems occurs over a period of time. Sometimes when they have low thyroid hormone levels or low vitamin B12 levels, that can affect their memory. All I have to do at that time is put them on medication for low thyroid hormone, supplement them with vitamin B12, and that can reverse their memory loss. Another condition is sometimes they are on many medications that can affect their central nervous system. Then more number of medicines we take, the medications interact with each other and we have a lot of side effects from the medications. Sometimes just taking off the medications, which can affect our cognition, memory, helps reversing the memory back. If we cannot find any cause that we can reverse the memory, then we pursue like with Alzheimer's or vascular dementia.
Well, interesting that you mentioned the polypharmacy mm-hmm. situation. Our listening audience knows that my father experienced that, and through a unique situation, we got it corrected and ended up reversing what we thought was a very slowly deteriorating situation to where it stabilized. Nevertheless, how can the individual manage multiple prescriptions or medications coming from multiple providers?
Okay. Always, we need to know why we are taking a particular medications. Now, a lot of material is available on the internet. There are several good websites. You can go to National Institute of Health or National Institute of Senior Services to get credible information. And you talk to your physician. For every symptom, we don't have to take a medication. The most commonly, I see patients who have arthritis. As we grow older, most of us develop arthritis. And they are on medications like, say, anti-inflammatory medications, maybe Aleve or Naproxen. What happens when we take NSAIDs is we retain salt in the body. When we retain the salt, we retain water. And that increases our blood pressure. Say you come to see your doctor and we say you have arthritis, okay, you take this medication. A month later you come back, your blood pressure is high. Then we'll say, okay, your blood pressure is high. We put you on your blood pressure medication. So what my policy is, I try to find out why is your blood pressure high? Is it because of the medication I gave you a month ago? All I have to do is change that medication, stop that and give something else, which won't raise your blood pressure.
And here's I'm going to speak in terms that the listening audience, the medicine that you use mm-hmm. to treat arthritis, as you said, mm-hmm. Has a high degree of salt in it mm-hmm. that causes you to retain mm-hmm. water, right?
Yes.
Typically, one of the primary treatments of high blood pressure is what's called a diuretic,
yes.
which is just the opposite. Mm-hmm. It causes you to excrete. So now you've got these two interactions that are totally yeah. the opposite of each other. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting.
So always try to find out why you are taking a medication. Are there any side effects? And if it has side effects, if we can switch it to something else which has no or less side effects.
I'm sorry, I got distracted there. I think that's my phone going off, but it's too late now. Tell us again, this multiple polypharmacy situation intrigues me. In my mind, there is two principal ways of addressing that. I want your opinion. I'm just going to let it go. How do you manage that effectively?
Okay. It depends on the medical conditions we have. Say if a person has heart disease, high cholesterol, diabetes, and congestive heart failure, or COPD, then we have guidelines for every disease, how to treat every disease. If we go by guidelines, that person may be on 8 or 9 medications. They may have to be on aspirin, a cholesterol medicine, couple of blood pressure medications, couple for COPD, maybe inhalers, Advair or albuterol as needed, and other medications. So always try to look at a medication which can treat two conditions.
And how do you, as the primary care physician, interject there? And you're dealing with a number of different providers. And here's where. Mm-hmm. How do you, or can you, effectively go to these various providers and have a communication that where all the providers understand what the total health picture is versus the specialty?
Yes, okay. That interests me too. Do you communicate with the other doctors for the family?
The communication is very important. So whenever a patient comes to me and gives her list of medications, I always ask, who is giving you this medication? And if I notice any interaction, I call the physician, say, this medicine side effect is this, and she's taking this medicine to treat the side effect of the first medication. Is there any way to switch it or to stop that medication which was causing the side effect? Most of the physicians are very good. Sometimes they are very busy. They may not think about it. But pharmacists also assist us. So we may give the medicine, and then we get a call from the pharmacy. And they say, okay, doc, this is the side effect of the medication. Are you sure you want to give it? So as I said, it's a team or interdisciplinary approach. You listen to one of the team members change it.
You hit the point that I was driving at is your pharmacist.
Yes.
There's a fallacy to what I'm about to say, but it is the best course of action. Everyone should find a pharmacist that they're comfortable with and use that pharmacist exclusively.
Yes.
They then have all of the medications regardless of what physician or specialist is prescribing. It comes to one single source. That allows either the pharmacist to monitor and to call Dr. Reddy and say, hey, do you know this? Or it allows you to access a single source. It's difficult in my mind. It's for a patient to know exactly what they're taking and the dosage, and to keep a record of that. That's not the best way to do it in my mind. I like the system that I spoke of, and that's one thing that I will advocate. You got primary care physicians who are the quarterback, but you've got a pharmacist that's providing. I'm going to use a sports term, they're up in the press box watching what's going on.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
And also now all of us have electronic medical record. One of the requirements CMS, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, has is we have to use electronic prescription. So when we have that, it will show up. If I give a couple of medications which interact with each other, I get an alert before I send it.
Yep.
Say, do you want to send it? This can happen when you take these two medications together.
Now, correct me, and I understand what you're saying, but that is only applicable to what you are prescribing. Do you get the records from other prescribing? Do you? So it all shows. So,
yes.
So what you're now telling me is because of the Medicare, Medicaid issue, they're somewhere should be an electronic record of all the medications that we're all taking. Now, that's a good thing when it comes to managing healthcare.
Yes.
That's a bad thing when it comes to your security and your freedom, but nevertheless, that's a different topic.
Like, say, if I am taking care of a patient, I would like to know what medication he or she is taking. Not only prescription, over-the-counter medications, any supplements, because many of the supplements interact with the prescription medications. Even over-the-counter, you know, we don't think about Benadryl. Many people take Benadryl for sleep, but in elderly, it has a lot more side effects.
Like what?
Like it causes dry mouth, dry skin, constipation.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Urinary retention. They cannot pass urine because it constricts the sphincter.
Yeah.
So people don't like to tell the over-the-counter supplements because they think, okay, it's available over-the-counter. It does. It may not have many side effects.
Well, speak about that. When you speak of supplements, the first thing that comes to my mind are vitamin supplements. And yet you should know that too, because the natural form will interact with the synthetic form is in some cases.
Yes. If they take a regular multivitamin, then it is okay. But if they take other supplements, I had a couple of patients who said they got an email from this website that this pill has all these I could not pronounce their names, actually. I don't even know what the ingredients they are. It was safe, and they got it imported from another country. You know, the supplements are not FDA approved, so I am not sure that they actually contain the ingredients they say it has on the box. So we need to do a little research. So I always tell them, I am not comfortable for you taking these supplements without knowing what's in it.
Mm-hmm. Let's kind of change topics here. You're a family physician,
yes.
Which everyone out there should understand and know.
And have.
And then you also do geriatric care.
Yes.
How do you broach the subject to, I was going to transfer from the family to the geriatric, and you probably addressed that. If the client is, or the patient is your client for years, that's a natural bridge. But what about someone, like for me, I have purely a family physician. At some point, should I move to a geriatric care?
It depends. If your family physician is comfortable in treating all your conditions, then you don't have to. See, family medicine teaches you to take care of everyone from birth to death. Actually, family physicians do deliver babies. We used to in the training, then I chose not to deliver babies because many of my patients would prefer gyne obstetricians to deliver their babies. So there is no special training needed to be a geriatric medicine physician. It's, you know, if they read the literature and keep up with the latest information, then no need of any special training.
However, one great thing that Dr. Reddy does is make house calls, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's so important because in the geriatric population, as we know, Sam, one of the biggest problems is transportation sometimes.
Yes.
So I think that's really neat.
Okay. My policy is I like to provide comprehensive, continuous care for my patients. Say if they are not able to come to see me, if they understand that the disease is progressing the way it's going, they understand the outcome of the disease. Some of them choose not to go to the hospital when they're sick. They like to get the treatment at home. They say, we don't want to go to the hospital and die there. I want to stay in my home and die here. I take care of them in the home. I consult hospice when I think that the end is near. Then our goal is to keep the patient as comfortable, as happy, and as safe as possible in the environment they want to be in.
That's great, great information. The more I listen, the more I'm drawn to the idea of family physicians, and I know you said from birth to grave, but they really need to have, I would think, some additional training in this geriatric care.
Yes.
I think because of the uniqueness of the situation. We, as I told you, time runs very quickly once you get started, and we're just about out. I want to ask you one question, Dr. Reedy. If we have a listening audience that, or listener in the audience that is in their 60s, late 60s, or whatever the age, but yet, and they have a family physician, but they just don't think that the family physician is attuned to the special needs. What piece of advice might you give them as they try to figure out which direction to go?
Then all the physicians, they have their ratings, you know, even the CMS rates every physician. They monitor every medication we give, whether we keep up with the guidelines. All these are available online. There is YouCompare website. You can compare physicians. So you can go online, do research, and find a physician who you're comfortable with. Or talk to your family and friends who they are seeing.
That's great.
Mm-hmm. Also, give them your location again of your office, a number where they can reach you.
Okay, the telephone number is 678-619-1974, and the office is located on 480 North Main Street, Suite 202, Alpharetta, Georgia 30009. And for people who want to book their appointments online, they can visit my website, www.alphafammed.com.
Well, Dr. Reedy, we certainly appreciate you being our guest. Thank you. And thank you for filling in on such short notice.
No problem. I enjoyed it. Thank
great.
You.
And we want to invite you back in the future to be a guest once again. And if there's anything going on within the practice that you think would be good information, let us know and we'll be glad to have you back.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Reedy.
That's it for today. We want to once again thank Dr. Reedy for being with us. And we want to remind our listening audience that they can always listen to a rebroadcast of today's show at eugeriaradio.com. And as we always close, we want to say that if the youth of this nation is its greatest natural resource, it goes without saying that the seniors of this nation is its greatest national treasure. Thank you and God bless.
Eugeria Radio is sponsored by Griswold Special Care and broadcast live from the Business Radio X studios.